Hello, everyone, and we warmly welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable discussion. Morning is March 3rd, 2019, and we are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church Independence, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. We're so glad you could join us today. And we will start with our morning prayer.
From page 165 of Miscellany. Goodness never fails to receive its reward, for goodness makes life a blessing. As an active portion of one stupendous whole, goodness identifies man with universal good. Thus may each member of this church rise above the oft-repeated inquiry, "What am I?" to the scientific response, "I am able to impart truth, health, and happiness, and this is my rock of salvation and my reason for existing." Mary Baker Eddy.
Thank you. And then Miscellaneous Writings, Mary Baker Eddy. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Okay, Linda, you can just the watch.
Watch number 470. Watch and remember that if you do not handle air in the first instance, it will handle you in the second. As the textbook says, this were no reason for discouragement, but a plea for watchfulness. The struggle to control evil thoughts is not a fight as mortal mind conceives of a fight. It is the effort to realize their nothingness, as well as God's power to dislodge them. It is the endeavor to realize your capacity to reflect God's thoughts only. End quote.
Thank you. Any comments on that?
I think it's a very important point because it's for so long it always felt like I was fighting something. Even declaring the truth is to against something, and yet to know that it's really to supplant the lie is a big difference. It's just something that pretends to be something, but it's not. So it's not a fight as such. It's a realization of powerlessness, I guess.
Thank you.
I also think it's a defining characteristic of those that are true followers of Mary Baker Eddy. She taught her followers to handle animal magnetism. The tendency in the human mind is to ignore it, close your eyes, and walk away from it, simply not do it at all. It's one of the defining characteristics of this church, as we're continuing Mary Baker Eddy's instruction to handle animal magnetism.
Thank you. It's very important, because it's a very subtle difference between just ignoring it and walking away from it and handling it. And handling it, we must.
I also like the idea of not letting it linger, because I'm just thinking of if someone or something came to my home, you know, that didn't belong or was wrong, would I just kind of let it sit there, or would I handle it right away, shut the door?
Exactly.
Absolutely. Yeah, and we're always cognizant of something. We're always conscious of something. And it's important that we be aware of what we are conscious of. Mrs. Eddy, you know, instructs us, be aware of your thoughts. What are you allowing into your consciousness? If you're allowing yourself to be mesmerized, then you are being handled by animal magnetism. But if you're aware of your consciousness, red flags will start to go up when error, wrong thoughts, try to enter your consciousness. And when those red flags go up, put your armor on. You're in a warfare. Yes, you know, you can think of it as fighting something, but the battle is the Lord's. As Florence said, you don't get down on the ground to battle it on its terms. You put your armor on and let the truth enter your consciousness. And that is how you handle animal magnetism.
Now, Mrs. Eddy says you don't beat out against the mist. You simply rise above it. So, and that's sometimes you do need to maybe put up a strong resistance to it. That's important. But then don't get into a battle with the beast where you've made a reality out of it.
Do you wanna? Yeah, I'm very happy to learn to handle it when it first comes. Because I didn't know anything about handling error, obviously, before coming here. And these things came to me, and I thought, well, I guess this is my identity, and I realized a lot of the work I've had to do the last 5 years is to undo that thought that these things are my identity. So to know when these things come in, yeah, that's not me. That's such a wonderful blessing all the time.
That's very good. You don't identify yourself with the error. That's why be careful when you say, I am this and I am that. Then you're identifying with an error if you're not careful. Identify with God, but not with the error. Impersonalize it. Realize it's not you. You can handle it much easier then. In the November 2014 Liberator, there's a wonderful article by Parsons, which actually goes along with this. I'm going to read part of it. It's entitled, Choke the Errors in Their Early Stages. Choke these errors in their early stages if you would not cherish an army of conspirators against health, happiness, and success. Science and Health 405. Little children know instinctively that well-being abides and well-being abounds. Harmony abides, harmony abounds. Perfection abides and perfection abounds. And that there is no room for anything else in the universe but the presence of God that abides and abounds forever. Two little children may fuss or fight together, but scarcely 2 minutes later they are sharing the same lollipop. Because little children feel the mood of disharmony as so uncomfortable that they will instinctively, instantaneously repent of it, naturally choke it, and choose better feeling thoughts in its place. This is also because little children know joy, are joy, and live joy, the fruit of the Spirit, the well-being that alignment with God brings. That goes along with what Gary was saying. They know instinctively when something's wrong. They can feel it, even if they don't hear it, because of their purity and their innocence. And then he goes on to say, thinking the wrong thought over and over again, as adults oftentimes do, allows that thought to mature into a belief. This belief, persisted in, then attracts other wrong thoughts related to it, confirming its reality. At last, this belief matures into an inverted kind of understanding that the Bible calls understanding darkened. The haste with which little children banish misaligning thoughts comes from the honesty with which they sense the apparent absence of God that results from such thinking, leading them to automatically, unconsciously follow Mrs. Eddy's inspired command to stand porter at the door of thought, to make sure this insidious thought process is disallowed at the very beginning. And then, thus, I need to treat any thought, no matter how small, no matter how slight, that takes me away from that feeling of centeredness in life, truth, and love, as something so disordering that I immediately stop thinking it and constructively replace it, drown it out in flood tides of spiritual thought, Christ-centered, Christ-elevating thoughts, thoughts of gratitude, of appreciation, mighty passages of Scripture, psalms, hymns, spiritual songs, angelic thoughts of divine empowerment. This is the essence of Christ's teaching in the Sermon on the Mount, which is God's basic training manual on the warfare with oneself, from Miss Delaney. So, what a good description of what is needed to be done. Pour in with flood tides of truth. Sing your hymns. This is what we all encourage you always to do. Get your thought back on track. Don't indulge in those negative thoughts. Be as a little child. Reject it instantly. It can't get toehold, foothold, stronghold. It's a beautiful article, and I'm sure it was from the forum. So it's also in a forum highlight, no doubt.
Yes.
Yes, okay. Okay, our subject today, Christ Jesus, Golden Text, John 14. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man cometh unto the Father but by me, Christ Jesus. And we had a most wonderful Bible study yesterday, and we thank you, Mike, on Christ Jesus being that way. And all the ways that we can learn to follow him better. It's interesting because yesterday, I don't even know where this came from. It fell out of a book, I think. And I thought, well, God must want it here today. And it's a little poem by Max Dunaway. I had it written on a small piece of paper. And it's called Thy Way. And he says, show me now thy way, dear God, for I have lost my own. It was not very good at best, and I want yours alone. I own too often led me far from what I know was right, and left me in the darkness when my heart cried out for light. Show me now thy way, dear God, and let me start anew. I need unfailing guidance, Lord, so let me walk with you. He says things so beautifully and simply, it's just wonderful. We have him a lot in our mix. And there's a book.
We have his book.
Yeah. What's it called? Angels or something. Something about angels. Anyway, the book of his poem. So when you feel, as the responsive reading says, if our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost. You feel lost. Say that simple hymn, simple poem, that simple prayer. Ask God for his light to guide you back in the way. And he will. Okay, Bruce, you spoke about the renouncing the hidden things of dishonesty.
Yes. Struck me so clearly that evil or error's ways, there its only hope is to remain hidden through deception. Except you can't, because there always is some way for the truth to be revealed and come to light. You don't know exactly when or how it comes about, but it's certain that it does. That's the action of divine principle. It is always operating. The truth of the matter always comes forth.
Thank you very much. And in our prayers, we can be praying this. The truth be revealed. That's all we need to know, that truth will be revealed. We don't have to outline what we think the truth is and what should be revealed. Just know truth with a capital T will be revealed. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. And then just pray that people have the eyes to see the truth and don't reject the truth.
one of the things that Mrs. Evans taught, which was helpful to me, is she said, you know, the truth is God. It's a mighty, powerful force. And in fact, the truth is urging itself on all of us all the time. It's not like we have to go digging around and searching for a hidden truth. No. We just have to open the door and let it in, because it's knocking on our doors right now. I thought that was so helpful, because, you know, what is it that we have to do to open the door? Truth. You know, what is the state of our consciousness have to be receptive to the truth that's urging itself on us? Well, we have to be humble. We have to be open. And we have to want what is true. We have to be willing to let go of whatever is not true. And that's the humility, the childlike quality that we should be retaining or regaining if we feel like we've lost it. But the idea that, you know, the truth is knocking on your door. So, open, just open the door. And it's knocking on the door of everyone. Just that some people close the door.
Thank you. In the Bible, in Luke, it says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he hath anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He hath sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to preach deliverance to the captive, and recovering of the sight to the blind, to set at liberty them that are bruised." Who is that talking about?
Jesus.
Yes.
And anyone who faithfully follows.
Thank you. What does the word anointed mean?
It's like a holy blessing.
Yeah, that's a good description.
Yeah, it's a selection.
To pour oil upon, to consecrate by unction, which is divine or sanctifying grace. And then, you know, I looked up that word bruised. It means to crush by beating or pounding. Goodness, to set at liberty them that are crushed by beating or pounding. The great compassion of the Christ. And we should have that compassion within ourselves. In Gary preparing for his reading Wednesday, he found some really beautiful things. One from People's Idea of Good. This is a preview of
Wednesday. Preview of what's to come. She finishes her sermon on People's Idea of Good with this. O Christian Scientist, thou of the Church of the Newborn, awake to a higher and holier love for God and man. Put on the whole armor of truth. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation, that ye may go to the bed of anguish and look upon this dream of life in matter, girt with a higher sense of omnipotence. And behold once again the power of divine life and love to heal and reinstate man in God's own image and likeness, having one Lord, one faith, one baptism.
That is wonderful. In case anyone of you thought, well, you weren't included in this, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, well, this is the correlative. Oh, Christian Scientist, And then she lists, and what are the things?
Awake to a higher and holier love for God and man. Put on the whole armor of truth. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. That ye may go to the bed of anguish and look upon this dream of life in matter, girt with a higher sense of omnipotence, and behold once again the power of divine life and love to heal and reinstate man in God's own image and likeness, having one Lord, one faith, one baptism.
Thank you. Isn't that beautiful? And that goes perfectly with what Florence read about our reason for existing, isn't it? So, no one is without excuse, as I read yesterday from Mrs. Eddy. We all are to be able to do this, to have that compassion, to heal. And in the lesson this week in Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy says, the question then as now was, how did Jesus heal the sick? How did Jesus heal the sick? So we will be getting into that, but I'm going to move into it by first reading 3 in the Bible, Jeremy, Mark 8.
Let me read all?
Yes.
Okay. And the Pharisees came forth and began to question with him, seeking of him a sign from heaven, tempting him. And he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, why doth this generation seek after a sign? Verily I say unto you, there shall no sign be given unto this generation. And he left them. Now the disciples had forgotten to take bread, and he charged them, saying, take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and of the leaven of Herod. And they reasoned among themselves, saying, it is because we have no bread. And when Jesus knew it, he saith unto them, having eyes, see ye not? Having ears, hear ye not? And do ye not remember when I break the 5 loaves among 5,000, how many baskets full of fragments took ye up? They say unto him, 12. And when the 7 among 4,000, how many baskets full of fragments took ye up? And they said, 7. And he said unto them, how is it that ye do not understand?
Thank you. What's that all about?
Well, the sixth section in the Science and Health, I think, does a very good job of explaining a portion of that. Discussing, having eyes, see ye not, having ears, hear ye not, lest ye understand and be converted. He taught that the material senses shut out truth and its healing power. And apparently his disciples could not see that, and they were still learning that at that point. So it's more or less their sense of that, and to be aware of this. We were talking earlier, I think, always be conscious of what you're thinking. And that's a good part of the lesson there.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Some time ago, it was a while ago, one Florence on the forum wrote about the leaven of the Pharisees. And the definition of the 1828, it's defined as anything which makes a general change to the mass. It generally means something that corrupts or depraves that with which it is mixed. And then she goes on, the Richard Oakes book, Mary Baker Eddy's 6 Days of Revelation, page 321, Mrs. Eddy warned that the time might come when medical thought might be so organized that it would make the practice of Christian Science almost impossible. The remedy given was not the counterpower of Christian Science churches, but when that time comes, I want my student to take every means possible to make science and health available to the whole world. Because what does she say science and health is?
The leaven of truth.
It has the leaven.
Yes, it has the leaven. And this is why Lawrence has recorded it. It's on YouTube. We put it out. Science and health, the leaven of truth, because I don't know, but it certainly would seem that the time has come, because isn't the medical thought highly organized, extremely so? So what is our defense, our only defense? And actually, it is not a defense, it is an offense. It is our book. And the more you work with it, the more you study it, the more you apply it, the more it goes out with power. The more you love it, read it, take the little book, she said. There's great healing in it, and it's so encouraging because people who don't seem to get it, there are many that do get it, and many all over the world that get it, where English isn't even their first language, and they get it. So that's a lie to think that you can't get it, that it's hard to understand. That's not the truth. You can get it. And then,
Elizabeth, it's only hid from those who are lost.
Yes. And what are they lost in? In the materiality of the day. And it's so easy to get immersed in it because it's everywhere.
And it promises everything. Delivers.
Yesterday it was made so clear that the way and the only way is the Christ. So you're spending a lot of wasted time and energy when you seek other ways or other solutions. The Christ, God's Spirit, has the answer to it all. And then Elizabeth, also on the forum, 2017. The idea is that leaven, quote, passes secretly and silently through the mass of dough, end quote. Jesus was instructing his disciples to be on guard when hearing the doctrines of the Pharisees and Sadducees, who espoused the inventions, traditions of men, and lacked the spiritual sense of the scriptures. He compares their doctrine to leaven, because they sought secretly to infuse the notion into the minds of men, and this is a quote now, and which, when imbibed, spread their infection and made men sour, morose, rigid, ill-natured, and swelled and puffed them up with pride and vanity. And that's from Gill's Exposition of the Bible. He advises his disciples to look about them, to watch, lest they should be infected with them. So, you see that happening, don't you? Secretly transmitted. That's why what Bruce was saying, we can't have things operate in secret. They have to come out. We have to see what is really going on here. And it is going on. The unveiling of this. The era, it's coming to the surface. I've been so grateful, you know, that Mike a few weeks ago had those classes on Revelation, because it describes this time, and it describes the red dragon just thrashing around. It can't even hide itself anymore. It's out in all its goriness.
I keep coming across where Miss Betty talks about the wormwood.
Yes.
Put into the I don't remember the quote now, but it was the idea that had that secret poisonous coming into the thoughts and how it affected even how people thought about her.
Yes.
And she read about it. When she read before, she had the case, the end, with her son and other people that wanted to sue her. She read that in the Bible, and it comforted her to know, because it said there would be a remnant when happening.
Thank you.
That is why it is so essential that we defend our right to free speech, to be able to voice the truth without having your head cut off. Free speech, free choice. That's why the idea of banning books as unauthorized is totally contrary to Christian Science. Because it's trying to hide the truth. It's error trying to hide the truth.
Or to own it only for yourself.
Right, which many of them do in the organization. That was one thing Mrs. Evans would talk about. She knew of someone who was teaching. He was a teacher, I don't know, remember the name, but was actually teaching from Bicknell Young, but never gave Bicknell Young the credit. I mean, that is a rank form of hypocrisy and dishonesty. So how can that survive? Yes. These people that would have the books and then not let any tell you can't have them. Well, anyway.
Like Mrs. Eddy's word to the wise from last week, that they'll give credit to some lesser author that's less right.
Yes, thank you. Yes. Yes, and that is what they've done, and that is certainly what New Age has done. So, these are all things to be aware of. And, you see, this gets into our how did Jesus heal? Now, today, we do have to take up this idea of materia medica. It has gotten so organized. And in many times, I think it's fair to say, it would make it seem that healings are more difficult, especially when people are immersed in all of this, and they have been immersed in it. But it's not impossible. By any means, it is not impossible. And there are many examples of wonderful healing going on now, today, in this church, as we hear on Wednesdays. So, how did Jesus heal?
He went to every situation with the truth about God and man.
Thank you. The truth. Truth is what heals. The truth is what will unwind your snarls, because you've been toiling alone, sometimes desperately, in error, not knowing this truth. Once you get the truth, it's so enlightening. You'll begin the process of healing. Healing yourself, healing others.
And he did something that was really, really, really important. He allowed himself to be governed by God every minute of every day of his life. He was governed by the Christ. And as our first citation in Science and Health says, when man is governed by God, the ever-present mind who understands all things, man knows that with God all things are possible. The only way to this living truth which heals the sick is found in the science of divine mind as taught and demonstrated by Christ Jesus.
And he beheld in science the perfect man, where sinning mortal man appears to mortals.
Yes.
The truth.
And he understood that because he allowed himself to be governed by God. And every experience that he had proved to him that God is all. It proved to him the truth of God's creation, of what man is. When he beheld in science the perfect man, there wasn't any doubt. He knew it because he had proved it in his own life.
I think we'd all, I think with all the distractions nowadays, I find myself that that's one of the most difficult things to handle is to see as Jesus, as so man, as perfect. I think we just get tangled up with the need to control and say, oh, well, yes, I have to let go, God do the healing, and then some thought come around saying, oh, but maybe I should do this, or maybe I should push a little bit on this side. I find myself struggling with that quite a bit.
Well, thank you. That's an honest mission, and we all do.
Yeah, we've all we all experience the struggle, don't we?
Yeah, and I think, you know, perpetually on the television, I mean, you can't watch how many minutes of a program without this and this and this and this. It's pushing itself. Like, this time has come, I feel, where Materia Medica is forcing people, and you just can't do it if we stay with the truth.
And we have to mentally push back, don't we?
Yes.
So, yes, as Florin said, this truth, to meet every situation with what is true about this. You see what Era seems to be saying. So what does Christ say? What does God say? What is in our textbook about this situation? Turn to that, and this is the knowing of the truth. And, of course, in the question, how did Jesus heal the sick, he was yearning to be understood, because what did he want the disciples to see healed?
God?
Yeah, it was not person. It was a principle that healed. A principle. It wasn't him. I'm going to read a few healings by Mary Baker Eddy in the book The Christian Healer. I have loved this book more recently because it not only tells us so many of her healings, but in many instances it tells how she healed. And in many instances she says she doesn't know. All she knows is that God did it, which is very comforting, because sometimes it is hard to describe how. How? You just know God comes and does it. And I'm going to have Gary, this is another preview of his Wednesday reading. I had him read it three times to me yesterday. Okay. She's talking about when she first discovered this truth. Remember, she fell on the ice and they said she was going to die. So, Gary, you can read right here. Starting this time.
Okay. This knowledge came to me in an hour of great need, and I give it to you as deathbed testimony to the day star that dawned on the night of material sense. This knowledge is practical, for it wrought my immediate recovery from an injury caused by an accident and pronounced fatal by the physicians. On the third day thereafter, I called for my Bible and opened it to Matthew 9. As I read, the healing truth dawned upon my sense, and the result was that I rose, dressed myself, and ever after was in better health than I had been before enjoyed. That short experience included a glimpse of the great fact that I have since tried to make plain to others, namely, life in and of spirit, this life being the sole reality of existence.
There you go, my friend. Life in spirit, not life and matter. And so the more we work to know we are spiritual and not in matter, greater the understanding of the healing comes. You know, I mentioned that as far as dealing with pain, that's what has to be handled, that life is in matter, that you're born into it and will die out of it. No, we are spiritual. And she glimpsed that, and that raised her up from the deathbed. So, now then there are a few of these healings I'm going to read. They're beautiful ones and varied by Mrs. Eddy. And just expand your thought. Jesus healed, he was anointed. Well, you are too, O Christian Scientist. This healing work must be done. And if we don't do it, who will do it? Many of you have commented on your animals needing healing. So, Mrs. Eddy was very fond of pets, especially birds. On one occasion, she had a little canary named Benny. And every morning he waited until Mrs. Eddy came down into the room. And then he would burst into a flood of song. When she went to the association meeting in Chicago during her week's absence, Benny never sang, but the day that the telegram was received, notifying the household of her return, he suddenly again burst into song. That shows the spirituality of God's little creatures, that they know this. And then it goes on one occasion, another little bird named May was given her, and in her spare moments, Mrs. Eddy would allow the birds to hop freely about the room. One morning, someone in moving a heavy armchair rolled it on one of May's tiny little feet. Mrs. Eddy picked up the bird whose broken foot was hanging by a shred of skin and laid her gently back in the cage. A few moments later, a lady visitor called, and while conversing with Mrs. Eddy, suddenly stopped and said, "What is the matter with that bird?" Indicating Benny, who was singing and chirping and flying to May's cage and back and forth and making a great noise. Mrs. Eddy replied by asking the visitor to look at May in May's cage. When the lady said, "Why, this bird has a broken foot," Mrs. Eddy said, "Well, Benny is sympathizing with her and wants to tell us about it. But never mind, come back in 3 days. Lady did return at that time and was amazed and delighted to see little May perfectly well, hopping about her cage, singing joyously. So, we do pray for these creatures, knowing that they are God's creatures and spiritual. All the truths we know for ourselves, we know for them, as Mrs. Eddy did. We've talked about truth healing, and now certainly the great healer we know to be is love. And then this healing, which is a little different example, hacking cough healed. In the first class I was in, a woman from Georgia seemed to have a hacking cough. Mrs. Eddy called her by name and said, "Why do you blaspheme God that way?" Never coughed again. More than a year later, when Mrs. Eddy delivered her address in Central Hall, Chicago, I met this woman at the door, and we knew each other. Almost the first thing she said was, "You know, I have never coughed since." Now, you see, in that instance, what did Mrs. Eddy do?
A rebuke?
Yeah, she rebuked. Now, we've been taught here with coughing to do what?
God good.
Yes. Why?
Get out of matter.
Yes. When you're coughing, you know, you're putting out this negative impulse. And it has to be, you can't just ignore it. And I mean, if you're listening to the cough, it can be very irritating to you listening. So you have to rebuke it. Say, "God's good." And if you say it mentally, but you don't just let it pass. This is being the instant in truth, always so instant in truth, era is always too late. So these are some examples of Mrs. Eddy's healing. And the last one, perhaps one of my most favorite, I know Shardy loves this too, about a young girl with a boil on her head healed. It's a little longer, so I think I will have Gary read it. We can conclude with this. Just remember, we must restore and maintain healing ability. It's given to us by God. It's not us doing it. It is God doing it. That's our safety, really, in knowing that. And it can be done. We mustn't let materia medica drown it out. Certainly one of the ways we do it is understanding Mrs. Eddy's place as the woman in the apocalypse, because that silences this thought. She was just some nice lady who had a few great ideas. Much, much more than that. Okay.
It was the year 1897, on the 4th of July, that Mrs. Eddy invited her church to her home in Concord, New Hampshire. She sent a telegram to a student here in Kansas City, Missouri, telling him to come and bring his friends. And I was invited to go. I went with my sister and my two children. When we were getting ready to start, we discovered that my little daughter, 7 years old, had a boil on the crown of her head. Her hair was heavy and curly, and the boil was very much inflamed. After we got on the train, she would not allow me to comb her hair. The confusion, the heat, and the crowded car made it difficult to work mentally, and her hair really went uncombed until we got to Concord. I did not try to comb it that night because she cried so bitterly, but Sister and I put her to bed, and we sat down to do our mental work on the matter. The next morning, we were to go out to Mrs. Eddy's home. The boil by this time looked like a small end of an egg. It stood up pointedly from her head and was more inflamed than before. I took the scissors and cut the hair from around the boil. Then I washed her hair and combed it, my sister working for her mentally all the time, and I holding to the truth as best I could while I worked. The whole thing was a most trying ordeal, and it was only through showers of tears that we finally got her ready to go. She had a little light straw hat with a wreath of daisies on it. She did not want to put it on because she said it hurt her head. Mrs. Eddy and a number of others spoke to us. When the speaking was over, Mrs. Eddy sat upon the porch as the people passed through the carriageway, greeting her as they passed. When my two children, a boy of 9 and this little girl of 7, got in front of her, they stopped the whole procession and stood looking up into her face with a most joyous smile. She looked at them and then looked at me. Then she looked back at them again and threw a kiss to each one of them. Somebody told them to pass along. I followed them. I wish I could make the world know what I saw when Mrs. Eddy looked at those children. It was a revelation to me. I saw for the first time the real mother love, and I knew that I did not have it. I had a strange, agonized sense of being absolutely cut off from the children. It is impossible to put into words what the uncovering of my own lack of real mother love meant to me. As I turned in the procession and walked toward the line of trees in the front of the yard, there was a bird sitting on the limb of a tree, and I saw the same love poured out on that bird that I had seen flow from Mrs. Eddy to my children. I looked down at the grass and the flowers, and there was the same love resting on them. It is difficult for me to put into words what I saw. This love was everywhere, like the light, but it was divine, not mere human affection. I looked at the people milling around on the lawn, and I saw it poured out on them. I thought of the various discords in this field, And I saw for the first time the absolute unreality of everything but this infinite love. It was not only everywhere present, like the light, but it was an intelligent presence that spoke to me. And I found myself weeping as I walked back and forth under the trees, saying out loud, "Why did I never know you before? Why have I not known you always?" I didn't know how long it was until my boy came to me and said, "Come, mother, they are going home." I got into the carriage and drove back to the hotel, but that same conscious intelligence and love was everywhere. It rested upon everything my thought rested on. When we got back to the hotel, there was no boil on my child's head. It was just as flat as the back of her hand. Afterwards, the hair came out for about 2 inches around where the boil had been. She was totally bald on the crown of her head, but the hair grew back as naturally as if it had never been out. I know that this revelation of divine love came to me by reflection from dear Mrs. Eddy, and for weeks it had a strange effect on me. I could not bear to hear anyone speak in a cross, ill-tempered tone, or do anything that would cause pain.
That is divine love in operation. I thought it really relates directly to what Parsons wrote on the forum, too, about Mrs. Eddy seeing on a fall day, a cold autumn day, the beauty she's translated into a beautiful summer's day. So we must all have this love, and we all can, because we all are reflections of God. And we can practice it to love God's creation. And that is what heals. Thank you all for joining
us
today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.